The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Crime and Crime Again discusses true crime stories that may contain disturbing content. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi guys, and welcome back. So I asked Twitter a couple of days ago to help me decide which case to cover for this episode, because I had a few options and I was having some trouble narrowing it down and deciding which case I wanted to sit down and talk about. And based on a Twitter poll, it was decided that I cover a solved disappearance. And it turns out that I had just finished watching an episode of Disappeared that intrigued me, and after watching the episode, I Googled this case to see if there had been any updates, and it turns out that there were many updates. So today I'll be covering the case of Kara Kopetsky, and her episode of Disappeared aired in December of 2010. Since that episode aired 10 years ago, there have been many, many updates in this case, and we'll be going over all of that information in this episode. So without further ado, let's jump right into the case. Kara Kopetsky was born February 17, 1990, in Frankfurt, Germany, to her parents Rhonda and Michael. She was the only child that the two had together, and eventually they did separate. At some point in Kara's childhood, Rhonda married Jim Beckford, and together they had a son, Kara's younger brother. Kara lived with her mother, her stepfather Jim, and her younger brother in Belton, Missouri, which is a small town that sits right at the border of Missouri and Kansas. At this time in 2007, Kara was 17 years old and a junior in high school. She had a fiery personality. Throughout her childhood, she was outgoing and bubbly, and she was not afraid to voice her opinions on anything. According to her family, she was very much a tell-it-like-it-is and march-to-the-beat-of-her-own-drum type of girl. She was fiercely independent, and she always wanted to do things her way. Kara became rebellious as a teenager, as most teenagers do. She had picked up smoking, and her parents had tried to prevent it, but they gave up because they realized that no matter what they did, Kara would continue to buy the cigarettes. She had a defiant nature to her, and she was going to do what she wanted regardless. She also had a tendency to skip classes at school, but again, that is not uncommon for any teenager, myself included. So now we can get into the day that Kara actually disappeared. On the morning of May 4th, 2007, Kara left for school around 7 a.m. Her mom offered her a ride, but Kara chose to walk because she wanted to smoke on the way. That day, Kara asked her mom if she could drop off a textbook that she'd forgotten, and she also asked her if she could wash her work uniform, because she was scheduled to work after school that day at 4 p.m., and she worked at the local Popeye's Chicken. Rhonda did drop off the textbook that morning, but she dropped it off at the school's office, and she didn't actually see Kara. She did also wash her work uniform before she herself left for work, and she left it folded neatly in Kara's bedroom. Jim, Kara's stepfather, got home from work around 3 p.m., as he usually did, and typically when he arrived home from work, Kara would already be home. That day, she wasn't there. Jim thought this was strange, so he tried to call her, but she didn't answer, and she didn't call back. Soon after Jim had gotten home and tried to call Kara, Rhonda also arrived home from work. They begin to wonder if Kara may have gotten detention for texting in class, and because they found it odd that she hadn't arrived home yet, nor had she called anybody, Jim drove to her school to see if she was still there, but everyone had already gone home for the weekend. No one was there. After checking the school, Jim then drives to her workplace since he knows that she was scheduled to work that day. Her manager says that she hadn't shown up and she hadn't called in, so Jim stayed and talked to the manager until about 4:20 p.m. in case she showed up late. She never showed. Though she had a defiant nature and was going through a rebellious streak, it was extremely out of character for Kara to miss work. Again, she was fiercely independent and she enjoyed having her own money to spend on whatever she wanted. When Jim returned home from looking for Kara, he and Rhonda realized that Kara's work uniform that Rhonda had washed earlier in the day is still folded neatly in her bedroom. There was also an entire carton of cigarettes left in her room, missing only one pack. Her phone charger and her iPod were also still there. Rhonda and Jim then checked the skate park, where Kara often hangs out with her friends, but no one has seen her there either. After checking all known potential locations with no success, Rhonda decides to check her phone bill. And Kara's phone bill is almost 100 pages long. She sits down and she calls every single number to ask if anyone has seen Kara, but no one knows where she is. After exhausting all options, they finally make the decision to report her missing around 5 p.m. on May 4th, 2007. The officer who responded to the report and came to the Beckfords' home didn't seem to take Kara's disappearance seriously. 1 year prior, Kara had been grounded and she defiantly left the house and stayed out all night. She didn't return until 7 a.m. The police were contacted during this incident, so it's likely that the police assumed Kara had just run away again. And this is all too common, it seems. With so many missing person cases, it seems like at the beginning of the investigation, their disappearance wasn't taken seriously, and they were very quickly written off as a runaway. To me, that just feels like laziness. Like police don't want to do the work of looking, they don't want to do the work of filing a report or talking to witnesses. They don't want to do the work of starting an investigation. And frankly, it seems like they just don't care. I know that it happens, that people do intentionally disappear and want to run away from their old life, and there are countless stories of people who went missing and then were found years later to be alive and well with a brand new life. But I still feel like police are often too quick to write people off as runaways and to just make the assumption that their disappearance was intentional. Kara's parents knew that she hadn't just run away. According to her parents, Kara had begun to mature and she was moving on from certain groups of friends, presumably groups of friends that influenced her rebellious nature. She had also made plans to go to community college after high school. What really got them were the items that she left behind in her bedroom. The first thing is, it's been noted that any smoker who was intending to be gone for any period of time would absolutely take more than one pack of cigarettes with them. Especially if they had an entire carton available to them, they would not just take one pack and call it a day. They would take probably the entire carton, and most of it was left behind in Kara's room. Not only that, but she was a teenager with a cell phone, and her phone charger was left in her bedroom. If she had intentions to be gone for a period of time, she definitely would have taken her phone charger with her. It was discovered that a friend of Kara's had actually gone into the police station and reported her missing around the same time that her parents had called to report her missing. The friend says that she hadn't seen Kara since May 2nd. And Kara's parents realized that that's because Kara was skipping school. They know for a certainty that they had seen her that morning, May 4th. When questioned, the friend said that she hadn't felt comfortable going to Kara's parents before the police, and as a result of this statement, it's learned that there are suspicions that Jim was involved in her disappearance. So, as is the case with any investigation like this, the family is questioned. Jim is questioned, and I believe he is given a polygraph, but he is quickly cleared as a person of interest. Despite police initially not taking Kara's disappearance seriously, they do actually begin questioning people that weekend. Don Spears, captain of the Belton Police Department, also reaches out to the media right off the bat. However, the same weekend that Kara disappeared, an EF5 tornado ripped through the town of Greensburg, Kansas. And Greensburg is just under 5 hours from Belton. So of course this event was very close to where Kara disappeared from, and it would definitely have been covered on local news stations in the area. The tornado leveled 95% of the town and killed 11 people. And unfortunately, it did overshadow Kara in the media. Despite Kara's story being drowned out by other events that weekend, an investigative journalist, Russ Potasek, actually does take an interest in Kara's case. Within 48 hours, Russ travels to Belton to meet with Kara's parents. Initially, he is shut out because Jim and Rhonda are wary of the media, and I don't blame them for that. Often the media are just vultures about things like this, and instead of helping, they just bring unwanted attention and grief to the family. After meeting with Kara's parents and seeing the things that she left behind in her bedroom, Russ immediately agrees that Kara did not run away. Within the first few days of the investigation, police review the surveillance footage from the school. The footage shows Kara exiting the girls' restroom between 9:30 and 10 a.m., and she stops to talk to a girl in the hallway for a moment. After this brief conversation, she exits the building and leaves the school. Police talk to numerous students who had been seen talking to Kara that morning, and they do track down the girl who was seen talking to her on the surveillance footage. The girl says that Kara had asked if she wanted to leave with her for a while, but she hadn't mentioned any of her plans for what she was going to do after she left the school. Kara was known to skip specific classes and then return to school later in the day, but that day, after leaving, she did not return to the school. Despite the police discovering this footage extremely early in the investigation, it was not actually released to the public until 6 weeks after Kara's disappearance. It's learned that the last phone call on Kara's phone was made just before 10:30 a.m. that morning, so right around the time that she left the school. One of her phone calls that morning was a 20-minute conversation with her ex-boyfriend, Kyler Yust. A witness also places Kara and Kyler together at some point that morning. And Kyler Yust is going to become a very prominent character in this case. A few weeks after her disappearance, it was learned that her debit card had been left behind in her locker at school along with her backpack. There was no activity on her bank account, and her MySpace account showed no activity either. Her cell phone had either died or was shut off the day that she disappeared, so authorities were unable to ping any last known locations with her cell phone data. Her backpack and her debit card were left untouched in her locker at school for over a month after she disappeared. And it wasn't even the school that had called her parents to tell them to come get the items. A janitor had called her parents and told them that if they didn't come and retrieve her items, they were going to get thrown away. And now a very important piece of evidence comes to light. It was learned that on April 28, 2007, 6 days before Kara went missing, she had said that her ex-boyfriend, Kyler Yust, had waited outside of her workplace for her to finish her shift and then forced her inside of his vehicle. He drove her around against her will until she managed to jump out of the vehicle and escape, and as a result of this incident, Kyler was allegedly charged with misdemeanor disorderly conduct and assault. On April 30th, 2007, Kara and her mother filed an ex parte order of protection, also known as a restraining order, against Kyler Yust, and in the filing, Kara stated that during the course of their 9-month relationship, Kyler had kidnapped her, restrained her, choked her, and threatened to cut her throat. Kara also writes in this filing that Kyler's abuse had, quote, gotten worse over time, end quote. She's scheduled to appear in court as a witness for this filing on May 10th, 2007, but because she disappeared 6 days earlier on May 4th, she couldn't appear in court and the filing was never completed. Russ Potasek, the investigative journalist, actually tracks down Kyler, and he questions him about his and Kara's relationship. Kyler admits that their relationship was rocky, but he denies any allegations of abuse, and he says that he has no idea where Kara is. Police did confirm that they questioned Kyler, and that they had given him a polygraph exam, which he passed. They also confirmed that he did have an alibi. However, they never specified what that alibi was. 2 weeks after her disappearance, on May 17, 2007, a man called the Belton Police Department claiming to have seen Kara at a Burger King in Lewisburg, Kansas. Lewisburg is only about 22 miles from Belton. They couldn't confirm the sighting via surveillance footage because the Burger King's cameras were allegedly not working that day. Witnesses also stated that they had seen a man with Kara at the fast food restaurant, so police develop a composite sketch of the man based on witness statements, but none of Kara's family or friends recognized the man in the sketch. Multiple other tips come in about sightings of Kara in Lewisburg. These were at grocery stores, convenience stores, fast food restaurants. There were tips claiming to see her all around town. One tip leads them to a grocery store, where a witness claimed that they had seen Kara working at the store. And after following up on this tip, it's discovered that a cashier at the store bears a striking resemblance to Kara, and that the cashier had a friend who resembled the man in the sketch. So this, of course, got Kara's parents' hopes up. Numerous times, hearing about all of these sightings of her in this town, 20 miles away from where they lived. They thought maybe she did run away, maybe she started over in a new town, but of course it was a dead end, and it turned out that none of these sightings panned out in the investigation.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Drivers who switch and save with Progressive could save hundreds. With that kind of money, you could go
big time
on a fancy water bottle
with ultra-titanium alloy metal.
You're not sure why you need all that. I mean, it just holds water.
But you're getting it anyway. Because if you're hiking near an active volcano and you accidentally drop the bottle into molten lava, your water will still be icy cold. Switch to Progressive and you could save big time
for water bottles. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, not available in all states. Potential savings will vary.
About a month after Kara's disappearance, on June 2nd, 2007, an 18-year-old girl named Kelsey Smith disappears from Overland Park, Kansas. And Overland Park is about 20 miles from Belton. Kelsey was last seen in a Target parking lot. Police were able to quickly review the surveillance footage from the Target, and it shows Kelsey entering the store and exiting with her items that she purchased only 11 minutes later. In the footage, there also appears to be a man who is in every aisle that Kelsey was in, staying eerily close to her, and he exits the store just as Kelsey was going to check out. Footage from outside of the Target showed Kelsey putting her items in her car, and then it shows someone forcing Kelsey into the passenger side seat of her car and driving off with her. So her actual abduction was caught on this surveillance footage. A few hours after her disappearance, Kelsey's car was found in a Macy's parking lot across the street from the Target. Her purse, wallet, and the items she had purchased were still in the car, but she was nowhere to be found. Police also review footage from outside of the Macy's where her car was found, and it shows that her car had been left there at 9:17 p.m., about 2 hours after it was seen leaving the Target parking lot. And they already know that it wasn't Kelsey driving her car out of the Target parking lot, because they saw on camera that someone else had gotten into the driver's seat and driven off with her. Also in this footage from outside of Macy's, a man is seen exiting the car after he leaves it there and running towards the street. And the man does appear to match the general appearance of the man suspected to have been following Kelsey around the Target. Unidentified fingerprints were collected from the driver's side seatbelt. This case comes up because it was strongly suspected at the time that Kara and Kelsey's disappearances were connected. They were about the same age, they had a similar appearance, and they lived in close proximity to one another. The extensive footage of Kelsey's last moments, especially the footage of her actual abduction, garnered tremendous media attention. Much more attention than Kara's case had gotten, despite the speculation that the cases were connected. Just 4 days after Kelsey's disappearance, on June 6th, 2007, the FBI uses cell phone records to ping her last known location, and they trace her cell phone to Longview Lake, Missouri, which is about 10 miles from Belton. I believe I read that just an hour after they pinged her last known location, a body was found in a wooded area of Longview Lake. Both families waited anxiously to hear whether the body is either of their daughters. but the body was quickly identified as that of Kelsey Smith. On the evening of June 6, 2007, the same day that Kelsey's body was found, police arrest 26-year-old Edwin Hall for the kidnapping, rape, and murder of Kelsey Smith. Edwin Hall was actually married, and he had a son. He was in the process of trying to leave town with his family when he was arrested. Hall did have a history of violence, and his vehicle was identified in the surveillance footage from the Target. The fingerprints found on Kelsey's driver's side seatbelt were presumably identified as those of Edwin Hall. And I say that because they arrested him within hours of finding her body. Like, they knew who they were going after. So I feel like it was quickly confirmed that those fingerprints were Edwin Hall's, even after all the other evidence they had that he was likely the one who did this. Edwin Hall was charged with first-degree murder and aggravated kidnapping on June 7, 2007. A year after his arrest, he pleads guilty to the murder of Kelsey Smith. Kara's parents also attended his sentencing. The Beckfords and the Smiths, Kelsey's parents, are very supportive of one another, which is not surprising. Their daughters went missing a month apart. They were the same age. It was initially thought that their cases were connected, so these families really connected with one another and became a support system for each other. Kara's mother, Rhonda, actually says that after the sentencing, she waited outside of the courtroom for Missy Smith, Kelsey's mom, so that she could be there for her and let her know that she was there. However, Edwin Hall is never linked to the disappearance of Kara Kopetsky. Searches for Kara were conducted in Longview Lake, where Kelsey's body was found, but no evidence of Kara was discovered. 2 years after Kara's disappearance, a Jane Doe in New York City piques the interest of the Belton police. I'm not sure how the Belton police heard of this Jane Doe, and I'm not sure why they were interested in investigating her as potentially being Kara, but for one reason or another, they did think it was possible that this Jane Doe was Kara. This Jane Doe had no memory of who she was or how she got to New York. But after seeing photos of her, Kara's family and police had doubts that it was Kara. DNA and dental records do confirm that the Jane Doe is in fact not Kara Kopetsky. 3 years after Kara disappeared, a massive search was conducted in the northern part of Belton. This search was comprised of about 235 officers from different organizations and departments, including the FBI, the Kansas City Police Department, as well as members of the Marine Corps. The scope of this search was significantly larger than any searches done before. It was huge. And because of this, it was speculated that new information about Kara's case had surfaced, but police, of course, deny this. I just can't think of any reason other than new information that a search this massive would randomly be conducted 3 years after a disappearance. In 2009, so not long before this search was done, a witness had reported that Kyler Yust had discussed his relationship with Kara with them. The witness stated that Kyler claimed to have been angry with Kara because he didn't want her to love or be with anyone else. The witness also claims that Kyler told them something bad had happened to Kara. So obviously that is incredibly incriminating, but it is not enough to charge somebody with murder or convict them of murder, unfortunately. And now we're gonna get into some statements and accounts that really shed some light on Kyler. In 2011, Kyler Yust was put on probation for 2 years after pleading guilty to beating and choking his pregnant 18-year-old girlfriend at the time. The victim stated that Kyler had threatened to kill her and that he told her, "I've killed ex-girlfriends before out of sheer jealousy." I'm gonna place a trigger warning right here because for about the next 30 seconds or so, I will be talking about acts of animal abuse, and I know that it can be really unsettling and disturbing for some people to listen to. So skip ahead by about 30 seconds if you don't want to hear the next couple of sentences. On July 5th, 2011, Kyler smashed a kitten's head on a bathroom floor, and on July 20th, 2011, Kyler drowned two kittens in a bag in a creek. And these are based on statements from another girlfriend of Kyler's at the time. He was charged with 2 counts of animal abuse for these acts. Also in 2011, another witness came forward stating that Kyler had confessed to them that he had strangled Kara and placed her body in the woods. In 2012, yet another witness stated that Kyler confessed to them that he had picked Kara up from school that day and that they had gotten into an argument that turned physical. The witness states that Kyler confessed to choking her out. So that is three witnesses so far, years after Kara's disappearance, that have come forward and said, Kyler Yeust has told me he killed Kara Kopetsky. Three different witnesses at three different periods of time. In 2013, Kyler was sentenced to 3 years and 9 months in a federal prison after pleading guilty to a felony drug trafficking charge. In 2015, while incarcerated on those drug charges, Kyler was again questioned about Kara's disappearance, but he declined to answer any questions. In 2016, Kyler's former cellmate contacted police and told them that after being questioned in 2015, Kyler had asked his cellmate for help creating an alibi. The cellmate also says that Kyler confessed to strangling Kara and disposing of her body. So now the tally is at four witnesses. Four separate witnesses at four separate periods of time who have contacted police and said Kyler Yeust confessed to me that he killed Kara Kopetsky. This is crazy to me. Four people over a period of several years, and police were able to do approximately nothing about it. Kyler had also previously admitted to police that he disliked that Kara saw other people after their on-again, off-again relationship. So it's pretty well known that Kyler was abusive, and he was overall a dangerous person. In 2011, it's learned that someone had brought a box into police on May 11, 2009. The box had been marked as, quote, evidence received for Kara Kopetsky missing person case, end quote, and was a clear plastic shoebox container. The person who brought the box in claimed that they had found the box in an apartment they were renting that was formerly rented by Kyler Yeust. The box contained notes, pictures, and other personal belongings of Kara's. The other belongings have not been specified. So now we're in 2016, 9 years after Kara's disappearance. And still, nothing has been found of Kara. Not her cell phone, not any trace of her, and certainly not Kara herself. On September 8th, 2016, 21-year-old Jessica Runyons of Raymore, Missouri, attended a party with Kyler Yeust, who was her boyfriend at the time. Witnesses at the party say that Kyler was heavily intoxicated and was being jealous and aggressive with Jessica. She was last seen leaving the party with Kyler to give him a ride home. On September 10th, 2 days after she was last seen, Jessica's car was found burned in a wooded area. And very quickly after her car was discovered, a friend of Kyler's came forward with information. This friend stated that he was with Kyler when he burned the vehicle and that Kyler had accidentally burned his face and hands. The witness also states that Kyler had admitted to strangling Jessica Runyons and hiding her body in the woods. On September 12th, Kyler was arrested in connection with the burned car, and he did in fact have burns on his face, hands, and arms. Not only that, but he had scratches on his face. Kyler pled not guilty to the charge of knowingly burning a vehicle. A few months later, on April 3, 2017, a mushroom hunter discovered human remains in a rural wooded area of Cass County, Missouri. And Cass County is the county in which Kara lived at the time of her disappearance. A search of the area was conducted and a second set of human remains was discovered. The first set of remains were quickly identified as that of Jessica Runyons. It wasn't until a few months later, on August 17, 2017, that the second set of remains was positively identified as those of Kara Kopetsky. 10 years after her disappearance, and Kara had finally been found. On October 4, 2017, Kyler Yeust was charged with the murders of Kara Kopetsky and Jessica Runyons. He pled not guilty to both murders. Since his arrest 3 years ago, there have been repeated delays with Kyler's trial. His defense team has made every move they possibly can to bide this man more time. In August 2019, Kyler's attorneys filed to have him declared mentally unfit to stand trial. His attorneys stated that they, quote, have a good faith belief that Kyler Yeust suffers from a mental disease or defect, and that as a result of his mental disease or defect, he lacks the competence to proceed, end quote. They cite that this belief is based on the opinion of Dr. Jose Matthews, who was retained by the defense to perform an evaluation of Kyler. On September 3, 2019, a judge granted the request to have Kyler again mentally evaluated to determine whether or not he was competent to stand trial. And apparently he was deemed mentally competent to stand trial because trial dates have been scheduled since that request to have the mental evaluation was granted. In December 2019, Kyler's attorneys filed another request, and this one was to have items of physical evidence retested for DNA. In February 2020, this request was also granted. The motion states that the company DNA Solutions, presumably a company retained by the defense, must be granted access to both sets of remains. The motion also states that DNA Solutions must be allowed to test hair recovered from a white SUV in 2013. I'm not positive which case that hair connects to. Presumably it would be Kara's, because Jessica did not go missing until 2016, and this hair was recovered in 2013. A new trial was scheduled for July 27, 2020, but in June 2020, Kyler's attorneys filed another motion requesting yet another delay. They stated that COVID-19 has, quote, seriously hampered their ability to provide counsel and interview potential witnesses, end quote. His attorneys also have argued that there were items in discovery that were not presented to them until 2019. And discovery is when the defense and the prosecution both present items of evidence that will be presented at trial to one another so that they're both aware of what is going to be presented at trial. Kyler's defense has also alleged that an investigating officer was having a sexual relationship with a witness, which of course would seriously compromise the entire investigation. So currently there is no trial date scheduled for Kyler Yeust, but the next hearing to schedule a trial date is September 15th, 2020, so in a few days. And that is as far as the information goes for Kara's case. I think it was glaringly obvious from the very beginning what had happened to Kara and who was responsible for it. But unfortunately, as is often the case, there was not enough evidence to prove this or charge anyone or convict anyone. But even though it did take 10 years, I think it is amazing for the family that they finally found Kara and they will finally be able to hold someone responsible for her death. And I do believe that Kyler Yeust will absolutely be held responsible. I think most people can say, with a fair degree of certainty, that Kyler will be convicted of the murders and he will spend his life in prison. And that is all for me today, guys. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at CrimeAgainPod, and you can also like the Facebook page, Crime and Crime Again Podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Host. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethost.com/terms.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.